When I was in high school and first decided that I wanted to study computer science, I knew that I wanted to build accessible computer science education software. I didn't know exactly how I was going to do that, but I figured that when I started college, I'd be exposed to all sorts of different opportunities. And I was exposed to all new opportunities and topics in computer science, but when it actually came to the job hunt, people weren't talking about their niche interests. They were talking about big tech. And eventually, I too decided to try out big tech and accepted an internship offer from Amazon. I never lost my interest in education software, but like many, didn't know where to find tech for good opportunities. Funnily enough, it was through my internship at Amazon that I met Anthony Suarez, who at the time was the CTO of Code.org, an organization that builds CS education software. But before Anthony was at Code.org, he spent many years working at Amazon. As many college graduates debate which type of company to start their careers at, I wanted to talk to Anthony about his experiences working in both big tech and at a tech-focused nonprofit and learn more about how he made this career transition. Thank you so much, Anthony, for being here. And would you like to start by introducing yourself?
Yeah. Hi, Alanda. Thanks for having me today. My name is Anthony Suarez, and I most recently was the CTO at Code.org, and excited now to kick off founding an organization called Founder FM, which is a social purpose corporation focused on connecting female founders and women learners that are learning to learn new professional skills mid-career. So really excited to get this new initiative off the ground in the coming months.
Great. Thank you so much. We are so excited to talk to you today about your career path and how you made the transition from big tech to the nonprofit world, as the decision to start in one or the other is a common dilemma for many of our listeners. But before we jump into how you actually made that transition, we want to start at the very beginning. So coming out of college, what were your professional goals? Were you exposed to the social impact space, or did you know that you wanted to work with nonprofits eventually?
Yeah, great question. I think for me, when I first entered into the industry, I think my primary objective was always just to learn. I think I wanted to be in an environment that exposed me to opportunities to learn new things, that challenged me to learn new things, and really gave me access and opportunity. So I think that's really where my mindset was and kind of what drives me. Reflecting on this too, I would say that I always felt I wanted an opportunity to feel connected to both the mission of the organization and the people that I worked with. And it turns out that both of those things tend to be pretty critical when you get into the nonprofit space. So it is not surprising at all that I found myself working at mission-focused organizations at this point in my career.
Yeah, that's really great that you've been able to find organizations that meet those goals, and they certainly sound like they would align well with nonprofits, as you said. So looking forward to your career at Amazon, what first led you to pursue an opportunity there?
Yeah, well, even prior to Amazon, I worked at for several years in what I would call like non-tech organizations. So everything from medical device manufacturing to education. And what made me join Amazon was this like access to working on a product that was very technical focused, right? So shifting from being maybe an operational cost in a business to really the focal point of a business, it kind of changes the mindset often of how engineering teams are perceived and the access that they have to, like, you know, focus on building things and products for end users. So that's, you know, one of the main things that brought me to Amazon. I think there are two like technology events that like in my career got me excited about working in the tech space. The first was virtualization, and the second was what we call the cloud now. When I first started working, these were newer concepts. I'm not even sure the idea of the cloud existed, especially in its current form. And I was really excited about working with virtualization. We were doing these things in like local data centers, but what excited me in particular about both these technologies was the idea of the impact it could have on our end users and for customers. It allowed organizations to bootstrap their idea with very little funding. You didn't need 100 servers, you just needed one to experiment. So it reduced cost and increased the speed for being able to build things and opened up opportunities for trial and error and innovation, because you can actually like spin up an environment, test an idea. If it worked, great. If not, try again. And those sort of like concepts really were not available to everyone. And so combining virtualization and eventually the cloud, where you could actually just pay for usage as you went, versus having to make a bunch of capital and operational cost investments up front, were like huge differentiators in how businesses could operate and who could even start their own business. So that piece in particular is really interesting to me.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting to be at the beginning of some of those things that are now so commonplace in the tech mm-hmm. world. Could you tell us briefly about the different roles that you had at Amazon, what you actually did as your job there?
Yeah, so my first job at Amazon was building software that provisioned all the EC2 servers. So EC2 is sort of the underlying infrastructure as a service product that AWS offers. It's a compute offering. And every server that landed in an AWS data center needs to get, powered on by a data center technician, and eventually needs to be made accessible for customers to launch instances on. So my team was responsible for all the DNS, DHCP, so core infrastructure services for all of those environments, and then the software that inventoried the racks of servers, kept track of them, and then eventually installed the underlying software on the physical hardware so that a user could launch an EC2 instance. So it was pretty cool to be at a foundational layer of what enabled millions of customers.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And it certainly also sounds like you had a high impact on customers as well. So you mentioned that was your first role, but what were the other positions that you held?
Yeah, great. So the second team that I worked on while I was there was an opportunity that arose to build a brand new team from scratch and a brand new product from scratch, which was to solve a problem for customers who were starting to use Docker containers as a way to provision their applications. And they really didn't have a ton of support. They were managing all those environments on their own. And my boss, or became my boss, had this vision of creating a managed service for Docker containers in the cloud. And I thought the idea was super cool and signed on to join him and a handful of other engineers. I think there was four of us to begin with. And we built this new series of products, or family of products, from scratch called Amazon Container Services. So Amazon ECS, Amazon ECR, and eventually like a serverless container offering called AWS Fargate. And that was a really, really cool experience because I got to build those products from scratch and also grow the team. Like I said, there was like four of us to begin with, and it eventually grew to be about 100 people on the team in just under 4 years.
And was this your last role at Amazon before you transitioned?
That's right. Yeah. So it was from this role that I took the opportunity to join Code.org in 2018.
And what motivated you, or when did you first consider leaving Amazon? And did you know that you mm-hmm. wanted to move toward the nonprofit space, or were you also considering other for-profit companies?
Yeah, great question. I don't know that I knew I always wanted to be a nonprofit, but when I left Amazon to join Code.org, it was specifically targeted. I wasn't seeking other opportunities. I thought Code.org presented a very unique opportunity to allow me to do two of the things that I really loved. First was, working in tech and like working on technical products and building things. And the second was something that I discovered as part of my ECS journey, was that I enjoyed building teams as much as I did products, and seeing the mission of Code.org and the focus on access and an opportunity for CS education to historically underrepresented students in tech, like this just seemed like a perfect opportunity for me to do something that I was really passionate about.
Now, to me, Amazon and Code.org seem very drastically different. So were you worried about anything when you made this transition?
Yeah, I think coming from a company that was really focused on technology and was working with really cool cutting edge type tools and deep technical expertise, and then going into a nonprofit environment, I was worried that I wouldn't feel challenged as much or have as much access and opportunity to work with new technologies, and that would be like potentially, you know, maybe less exciting, or even long term, like would I lose some skills by choosing to work in a maybe a nonprofit environment where the focus was less on the tech and more on the mission.
Yeah, those definitely all sound like very valid worries, considering you were making a huge career transition. So now, looking at some of the perceptions that you had of the nonprofit sector before you went to Code.org, can you talk a little bit about that and if anything surprised you once you got there?
You know, I was working in a very fast-paced environment, a new challenge every minute. It was really, really exciting. And I, you know, was worried about a perception of like, you know, is there a lot of politics? Is there a lot of red tape? Are things moving slow? You know, at times the teams are much smaller, maybe don't have access as much to funding. So does that really, lead to like a slower paced environment where maybe I wouldn't be as challenged or would be working on less exciting things? So I think that's definitely at times a perception that I hear about nonprofit. To your last point about what surprised me, I would say all of that, because my experience has been that it's just as fast-paced as large tech. It's just as challenging as large tech. The opportunity and access to work with new technologies is there. The criticality of delivering highly available software to our, especially at Code.org, to our, you know, millions of students and teachers, makes for an extremely challenging problem space for us to solve when it comes to scale and availability. And, on the perception around like pace, there's always something to do. And frankly, maybe even more so from an urgency standpoint, because our mission is just so critical to the work we do. So, I think at this point, I'd challenge anyone that was coming from tech and worried about whether they'd feel excited, engaged, or have access and opportunity to learn new things by moving into nonprofit. And I'd say for certain, you can get those opportunities in both places.
That's really great to hear, because I think that is definitely a concern of a lot of students. But I also want to ask just if you think that's unique to Code.org, because it is a tech-focused nonprofit. There are also a lot of other organizations that may not have that same people with technical experience. Do you think that has made that much of a difference?
Yeah, I think for me, I think of it more as like what problems you're trying to solve on behalf of your users. So while our product may seem more technical at Code.org, there are lots of nonprofits that are trying to solve problems on behalf of their users and are using technology to do so and are doing it at scale, right? So, organizations like the Wikimedia Foundation or Khan Academy or Donors Choose and Global Giving, like these are organizations that I've had opportunity to get exposure to through a CTOs for Good group that I'm part of. And they're dealing with the same types of challenges, maybe different technical applications, but from an education standpoint, but they're building systems of scale. They're building these back-end distributed systems that are challenging to figure out how to operate and give great learning opportunities to engineers who are interested in exploring those spaces. So I think it's more about like the culture of the organization. Are they focused on solving problems for users, and are they willing to invest in using technology to help them do that?
That's definitely a really great point, that we have to look at the people and the culture and see if it will give us the type of opportunities that we are looking for, regardless of what type of organization it is. So not only did you make the transition from Amazon to Code.org, switching companies, you also made the transition to a new job title as the CTO of Code.org. Could you tell us a little bit about what that was like, and if you were able to keep the same amount of technical involvement that you had had in previous positions?
Yeah, well, it was intimidating. Sometimes the title is reflective of the job role, and sometimes it isn't. And what I appreciate about the opportunity to work at Code.org was I was able to really create a role that focused on doing what was best for the organization. And so some days that meant being hands-on and helping out, to being in the on-call rotation and supporting the team after hours. And sometimes it meant stepping back and helping the team or other parts of the organization think bigger picture around organizational aspects, like our hiring processes or how we build and grow individuals within a team, or things like pay equity. So I think for me, the title in this case just represented, a commitment to do whatever it took to support the team. More traditionally, I would say there are several types of CTOs. I think, in some organizations, a CTO doesn't have any direct reports, and they're just sort of like an architect or someone who's responsible for making the helping the team make high impact technical decisions, and maybe they don't have direct responsibility of like overseeing any engineers. In other roles, you have direct reports, and so I think it really just is organization specific. What I like to think about when it comes to having a long term vision about your career is to invest in both. If you're interested, even if you decide to lead teams and have the opportunity to lead teams and have direct reports, and finding ways to stay hands-on is a great way to continue to earn the trust of your team and for you to have the empathy for the work that they do every day. So I like to encourage doing both as long as you can.
Yeah, and you mentioned two different kind of types of CTOs. Which one would you describe your role as?
I think it depended on the day, which was what made working at Code.org super fun and exciting. Probably, if you ask my team more times than not, they'd like me focusing on the organizational and more strategic things and leaving the tough technical things to them.
And you did mention this previously, actually, with your work with CTOs for Good, but you are involved with a lot of other initiatives besides Code.org, including CTOs for Good and even Pay.org. Could you describe how you got involved with those, and if that happened as a result of joining Code.org? Was that an interest before working in the nonprofit space? How did you get to those different initiatives?
Yeah, so a little bit of mixed. So with even Pay.org, that really stemmed out of an interest for myself to learn more and become a better advocate for pay equity, and in particular focusing on helping women in engineering and STEM roles advocate for themselves around compensation fairness. There's just so much to learn, and it's still a challenge across the industry. And so for me, I use these as vehicles to learn more and to share what I'm learning with others, and in any way to encourage them to also get involved and do something. So that's been just a a great learning opportunity. For CTOs for Good, that was a unique opportunity that I was presented with when I became a CTO and joined Code.org. And this is an amazing collective group of individuals that are all leading engineering and technology teams and product teams within nonprofits across the country and in some cases across the globe. And they come together to share ideas around what it means to build effective teams, effective cultures and inclusive and welcoming cultures within organizations and technical teams. And then how to leverage all that to have the impact within a mission-focused organization. So it was a great opportunity to be part of that group and to learn from so many other inspirational leaders across the industry.
That sounds like an incredible opportunity to share knowledge and learn from others who may be facing similar challenges to those that you face in your position. Now we have talked about Amazon, we've talked about Code.org, but most recently you have created your own organization, Founder FM. Could you tell us a bit about what Founder FM is?
Yeah, it's very exciting. So just, a culmination of an opportunity to do something new and to hopefully have an impact in an area that I feel really passionate about. You know, one of the best things about being at Code.org and my time at Amazon is I've had an opportunity to work with just really amazing people and to give back in small ways to help them grow their careers, establish their careers in the direction that they want to do so. And I think one of the most rewarding experiences that I've had in my entire career has been when I've had a chance to help someone see their own potential and create access and opportunity to achieve it, right? And my goal with Founder FM is to bring a group of female founders together, give them the space to incubate their ideas, get their vision around their product and pair them with learners, other women who are interested in building new professional skills that allow them to change job roles mid-career, pairing these two groups of highly motivated individuals together to form founding teams and to give them the support they need to execute on these big ideas and help them be successful. So that's the basic premise. Is really it's a community and a set of programs that help women change the face of the future face of tech.
And on your website, you have a letter listed from you, and it says you are starting with $1 million towards this initiative with the goal of growing that later. And I mean, this sounds like an incredible organization, but also a somewhat daunting task from my perspective. So what actually gave you the confidence to leave your job at Code.org and start your own organization?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have to ask myself that each day too. I think the inspiration comes from seeing the success of so many strong women that I've had an opportunity to work with, right? They are the inspiration, right? I've learned from them. They've been my mentors. They've been examples for me. They've supported me throughout my career. I feel super fortunate in that way. So, I think when you kind of brush all of the risk perspectives aside, at the end of the day, I try and keep a laser focus on, what impact I want to have. And a lot of times we associate impact with scale. And for me, this is a lot more personal, right? Impacting one person, two people, five people, 10 people, it's an opportunity to change lives and to help people achieve their goals that, for them, maybe changing their lives. And I think that's just an amazing opportunity to be part of something like that.
That's really interesting that you mentioned getting to impact individuals and working on maybe a bit of a smaller scale, because at Code.org, you impacted so many students across the globe. So it's really cool that through your work, you've had the opportunity to do both. And now moving on to, you know, you're focusing on women and other underrepresented groups with Founder FM. Have you ever faced criticism as a man working in this space, particularly because you don't necessarily have the same shared experiences as the people that you are serving?
Yeah, I mean, I think any criticism there would be correct, right? I don't have the shared experiences of the, you know, people I'm working with, but I think it's also a daily reminder for me to step back and create space for them to be the ones that are really leading. My goal here is just to be a facilitator, right? So as we build out the organization, as we think about the folks that are really having the impact within this organization, supporting this organization, they're all the ones that are doing the heavy lifting and the ones whose voice that we want to amplify. So, you know, I think anytime I face criticism on this topic, it probably means I'm doing too much talking and enough listening. And it's just a good reminder for me to step back and let others step forward.
Now, stepping back and looking at the roles you've taken on through Amazon, Code.org, and now Founder FM, they all appear to be very different in their purpose. So how do you define success in your career as you move throughout these seemingly very different roles?
Yeah, I think maybe I have two different lenses. On the product side, I think, you know, especially for the work that we've done at Code.org, I think it's been just amazing to be part of an organization and a team that's shipped really cool curriculum and tools that help students learn about things like AI and machine learning or how to code. And so evaluating it purely from a product perspective, like, and as an engineer, it feels good to like look at like fun stuff and to see the impact and the usage, right? And you can, you know, take a moment to reflect on like, you know, the number of people that have used the stuff you've shipped, and that has a large sense of reward, right? At least it does for me. But I think the more long-lasting success criteria has been the people that I've had a chance to work with, the people that I've seen grow their careers and grow as humans, as people. And I think for me, success is seeing them recognize their potential and achieve their potential and their goals. So I've had a chance to work with individuals that were engineers and wanted to be product managers and change job roles, and you know, people tell them that they couldn't do it, and work with them so that they saw a path forward and had the opportunity to do so, and have been extremely successful in those roles. People that were not engineers and wanted to be given opportunities to become software engineers and see them succeed equally well. There's probably nothing like that, at least for me, seeing people be your product and see them do amazing things. And if you're looking for a way to you know, amplify your impact for every time you invest in another person and they go and do other great things, then there's a added benefit of that too, especially when we think about, you know, nonprofit work and mission focused organizations that is a great way for you to extend your impact, I think. So I think those are the two things, but certainly the latter one around measuring success by the number of people I've had an opportunity to have a positive impact on is the thing that drives me the most.
So looking at most of our listeners are students and they are interested in pursuing similar types of work that you are doing currently. So we want to take a moment to address some of the concerns students may have about entering the nonprofit space and also maybe see what advice you have for them going forward. So there is a focus at schools on going into big tech and working for the most competitive companies, and the nonprofit sector is really discussed very rarely. And more specifically, that may stem from a fear of not being able to have a stable job in the nonprofit sector, or fear that the work done at those organizations is undervalued. So from your experience, do you believe these fears are valid?
I think I think about them slightly differently, right? I don't want to discount anyone's, you know, fears or instincts around a specific job role or organization. Like generally, I say trust your instincts, right? So if you're faced with making a decision, you know, I think instead my encouragement is to do your due diligence. Look at the culture of the organization. Look at the access that you'll have to learning opportunities and the people there that will help you grow. But at the end of the day, for me, the bet I would take 100 times out of 100 is on the person who's dedicated to learning and going to seek out those opportunities to learn, that they're going to be successful regardless, right? So whether it's a large tech, nonprofit, startup, those are not the foundational things to make the bets on. The thing to bet on is yourself. And, you know, businesses come and go, people around you come and go because it's a business. And I think the critical thing is to invest in yourself, learning opportunities, and that can happen at any size organization. You know, just look at the last, you know, 10 years, many large organizations that we thought would still be here didn't adapt with, you know, market, and, you know, maybe aren't here anymore. Others that were maybe barely used up until, you know, March of this year when things changed, are now, you know, the next Googles, right? You know, we don't have, when we do a video call, we call it a Zoom call now, right? So, you know, from an industry standpoint, things change often. But I think finding opportunities, regardless of the organization size or type, and a place where you can grow is the most foundational thing you can do.
That's a really great perspective to keep in mind when looking at the massive range of opportunities available to students looking to start their careers in tech. Many students also want to first work in big tech to create a foundation in skill and monetary security. Do you think students have to first go to a large tech company before working in the nonprofit space as you did?
Yeah, great question. I think that if you look at your career over a longer period of time, then again, focusing on opportunities to learn and build skills pays off over taking a high paying job right out of college every time. Everyone's circumstances are different. And so this is definitely an individualized decision that has to be made. But you know, when I think about a career that's, you know, 10, 15, 20 years long, you know, likely longer, there's plenty of time to make money. And as you build skills and, you know, become more of an expert in a specific area, like access to that doesn't go away. It grows. And in many cases, it grows even more so on your terms, right? You get to be more selective about the companies you work at because you have a skill set that is desirable. But the initial element is you have to have the skills, right? So, you know, going to work at a large tech company and, you know, simply because of, you know, the financial reward, and if you don't think it's a place that's going to help you as an individual grow and excel, then I'd say it's not the right decision, right? Go join a company where you feel you're going to be supported, given opportunity, space to learn new things, grow. Because those are skills that people can't take from you, right? Those are the things that once you have them, they're yours. And you just want to accrue as many of those experiences and skills as you can early in your career, because they become the building blocks for, you know, additional learning, that next project, that next skill, like you just keep building on them. And so I think for me, I've always just tried to prioritize that. You know, in the near term, sometimes people look at that and they might even tell you you're making the wrong decision. They might say, like, you know, how could you choose this opportunity over this other one? And they may be singularly focused on compensation. But, you know, I think my experience has been when you look at this in aggregate, there's plenty of time for that. And you'll likely be a lot happier if you focus on, you know, investing in ways that help you grow as an individual, especially in the long term.
And we have now talked a lot about, you know, finding growth opportunities, finding people to support you, and finding a company that will give you the opportunity to build your skill set. But how should students actually go about finding those companies, finding those organizations where they believe they can do those things?
So I think a lot of the way I think about this is the work to find that, you know, first job starts before you even graduate. And so getting involved in organizations like Hack for Impact, where you can work on projects and get the experience of working in production code bases, really helps to not only give you that exposure you need to understand how to and build the skills to be effective in a you know, in that first job as an engineer, but additionally it helps you create a differentiated resume, right? So it gives you real projects on your resume. And I think often the challenge is having a resume that shows you know, project work outside of the classroom. And that's a critical piece to getting your resume often reviewed by hiring managers. So I think there's a lot of that you can do while also doing good through organizations, like I mentioned, like Hack for Impact, contributing to other open source projects that you're really passionate about, and you know, volunteering time. You know, working on a side project certainly is something that I think is often done. But at the end of the day, like, not everyone has an opportunity to do all those things outside of the classroom, because they may be spending all of their free time, you know, on classwork or frankly on working to support their education. You know, for those folks, when they get that first job, what I would say is it's really a discovery phase, right? So if you're in that first job and like start at a company which you're uncertain sure of, you know, you're in an evaluation mode. Like, if it feels like the right fit, and you're learning in the ways that you want to, that's great. If not, then you know, seek out the opportunities, mentorship within the organization. Mentorship outside the organization, connect back to people that maybe you were in university with that that maybe have moved on to other places and can give you access to mentors in their companies or even opportunities in their companies. Don't feel stuck. Like, don't feel complacent. Don't feel like this isn't for me because for this you know, this first swing wasn't successful. Like, it may take several attempts right out of school to land in a place that feels like home, and that, you know, the place that you were meant to be this entire time. You might not always get there the first time, but like sticking to like what you know are your values and the things that motivate you and that create a space where that you feel you can learn and grow. You know, that'll come in time. And you know, that's part of what we're trying to do with Founder FM. If you ever find yourself in a situation where you don't feel like you've been able to do that and need the support to find that place, then those are exactly, you know, part of the outcomes that we're here to help facilitate ourselves. So,
yeah, and I really like that advice, and you know, it may be difficult to not feel stuck, but for so many people, finding that great opportunity where they're meant to be takes a while, and it takes a little bit of trial and error as you go through different roles. So I really appreciate you sharing that piece of advice. And lastly, again, because most of the students listening, or a lot of them, are interested maybe working with nonprofits or working in the social impact space, do you have any general advice for students who do want to make an impact in their work?
Yeah, get started, right? I think I'm confident that every student listening to this will find a unique way to have an impact that aligns to, you know, their areas of interest. But it takes, you know, initiative, it takes the risk, it takes the courage to take that first step, right? So find the organization that you're passionate about that aligns to things that you care deeply about. You know, find ways to make an introduction, volunteer, you know, apply for an open role. And then when you get those opportunities, you know, realize that there's something to learn in like nearly everything you do early in your career. Like, you know, maybe it's not the most technically challenging, but what you're learning there is how to become more proficient, more efficient. Maybe the task that took you a week to do last time, because you've now done it three times and you're saying, wow, this is boring. Well, maybe the subtle note is like, it no longer takes me a week. I can actually do it in 4 hours now. Right. So what you learned was not a new technical skill, but you learned how to be more efficient and effective. And now you can share what you learned with someone else. Right. So just, you know, I encourage everyone to step back and realize that early in your career, every single experience is an opportunity to learn something new. And in the future, those will be the things you're sharing with. Those are the experiences you'll be sharing with your future mentees and people that you're offering advice to down the road. And it all starts, you know, on day one. So every opportunity is a learning experience, I guess, is what I'd say.
This podcast episode was hosted by Elena Fowler and produced by JJ Liu and James Wang. Thank you so much to our special guest this week, Anthony Suarez. Bites of Good is a collaboration between Hack for Impact and Impact Labs. To learn more about the podcast or our partner organizations, visit us at bitesofgood.org. That's bites with a Y. Be sure to follow the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram for show updates. Thanks again for listening.